Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Lots to cover, so let's get right at it. Today was a very good guest day. Lee Jenkins brought it, but then again, he always does. Longtime Jungle friend and Nevada basketball coach Eric Musselman was tremendous. New York Post MLB columnist Joel Sherman got us ready for pitchers and catchers, Yankees. Then you had the Lakers and Rondo turning their beef about the Celtics into a couple of early ejections. The Hood and the Greek Freak both nearly broke Instagram on Valentine's Day. And on a much, much different note, I had to open yet another show of senseless tragedy. Yes, it is a sports show, but it's not an ignorant show, and I cannot ignore what's going on around me. Now it's on to the Daily Jungle. Where I want to start is here. And, of course, this is a sports show. It's a sports show, and everything that I talk about here today pales in comparison to the murder of at least 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. You know, for me, and this is why I'm starting right here, it's hard for me to care about the Lakers and the Pelicans or the Olympics or anything else in the world of sports when you see that kind of horror and you see that kind of devastation, when you see children running for their lives, when you see parents in the kind of pain that no parent should ever, ever have to experience. When you hear the story of an assistant football coach, Aaron Feiss, who was killed while protecting and helping students, reportedly using his own body to shield three of them. Golden State head coach Steve Kerr was asked about it yesterday, and yet again, he summed it up perfectly.
It doesn't seem to matter to our government that children are being shot to death day after day in schools. It doesn't matter that people are being shot at a concert, at a movie theater. It's not enough, apparently, to move our leadership, our government, the people who are running this country, to actually do anything. That's demoralizing. But we can do something about it. We can vote people in who actually have the courage to protect people's lives and not just bow down to the NRA because they've financed their campaign for them. So hopefully we'll find enough people, first of all, to vote good people in, but hopefully we can find enough people with courage to actually help our citizens remain safe and focus on the real safety issues, not building some stupid wall for billions of dollars that has nothing to do with our safety, but actually protecting us from what truly is dangerous, which is maniacs with semi-automatic weapons, man's just slaughtering our children. It's disgusting.
Golden State head coach Steve Kerr. And as horrifying as that was yesterday, it's even more horrifying to remember how many times that this has happened. How many times have I been on this show and said, this is a sports show, but, and then talked about a shooting in Las Vegas, Orlando, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook. The list goes on and on and on. And we all know what happens next. We know the drill because we have been here before. There's a mass murder in a school or a movie theater or at a concert. News crews set up. Interviews are done. Everybody says thoughts and prayers. We read about the people whose lives have been ripped away, and then nothing changes. We say never again. And then it happens again and again and again. How many times do we have to see this? How many kids need to be murdered in schools before we say enough is enough? And for those of you who want to say, hey, this is sports radio, I come here to escape from that kind of stuff. I get that. I understand that. I hear you. I would like nothing better than to be talking about sports all 3 hours today. I would love to never, ever have to talk about another shooting ever again. And yes, this is a sports show. It is not a news show. But it's also not an ignorant show. And I can't ignore what's going on in the real world. So I'm not going to sit here and say nothing. Because saying nothing and doing nothing leads to this happening again and again and again. Something has to be done. Because we've done nothing every single time, and more people are dying. Our children are getting slaughtered. Now, I've done a lot of soul searching. Trying to figure out what I can do. And I hope you're all doing the same. I still don't have the answer, but I know what is not the answer. Just saying thoughts and prayers and then changing nothing. Something has to be done. This is not normal, and we're allowing it to become normal. It is not normal for parents to wonder if their kids are going to come home from school today. It's not normal for football coaches to be shielding students from bullets. It's not normal for children to go to school with the possibility that they'll get gunned down in a classroom. But we're making it normal, and we can't do that. So I'm going to still do today's show. I'm going to still do my interviews. I'm still going to have our topics. Except know this, none of these topics, and I've got strong opinions, and I'm eager to get to some other topics, but none of them were as important as this one. So that's where I started today. We could talk about anything you want. We could talk about this. We could talk about something else. But I felt it was very important to start the show right there. Because right now, I can't think of anything more important than addressing that issue. Lee Jenkins. Lee, it's so great to have you on this morning. How are you?
Great. How you doing, Jim?
Good. Good. Good to talk to you, Lee. So take me back to last week when the Cavaliers completely revamped their entire roster in a matter of hours and those deals were being announced. What were you thinking at that time?
Jim, somebody wrote it perfectly. And I don't want to plagiarize them, but it felt like somebody described it like playing Scrabble and you don't like the pieces you have and you just throw them all back in the bag and take seven new ones. It felt like that's what they were doing. Like, and I was out there in the preseason, and I felt like that was going to work. Like, LeBron James was surrounded by his peers, by people who sort of thought the game the way he did, who'd been through battles the way he had. And it kind of makes me wonder just about team building in general and the kind of dynamic you want in your locker room, because clearly those guys didn't get along. Clearly it didn't work. And what Kobe Altman and his staff did was they surrounded LeBron with players who are not his peers, really not his equals. They're younger guys, and they're guys who are likely more probable to just follow him and to sort of, you remember when Tristan Thompson in those early days, it almost looked on the floor like he was trying to impress LeBron, like he was playing for him. And just in these first couple Cavaliers games, some of these younger players, it's the same sort of vibe. It seems like they are happy to follow in his wake, knowing that he could take them to a place they haven't been. Whereas a lot of those players before the Cavs had, they had already been deep in the playoffs. Maybe that's not what drove them anymore.
Lee Jenkins joining us. You know, Lee, to that very point, you tweeted something and you said, quote, in irony of LeBron's career, he seeks the super team but doesn't really need one. A half a dozen useful NBA players who can move and shoot are often enough. So in part, you explained what you meant by that. But what's that say about LeBron and his abilities as a player?
You know, and I should have qualified that with, like, lineup data. Because when you look into this, when you look into the advanced numbers with him, a lot of times the most effective lineups with LeBron are LeBron and four role players. LeBron and a bunch of shooters and a couple guys who can defend okay on the wing. Now, in terms of bigger picture, I realize in order to win the championship, they've needed that secondary kind of star ball handler, Wade in Miami, Kyrie in Cleveland. But when you see the smaller samples, a lot of times it isn't LeBron and the stars. And I also wonder if by surrounding himself with all these superstars, you sort of create these more difficult, more tense situations in your locker room. You know, guys like an Irving situation, wondering, because he does take up so much of the oxygen and so much of the wattage in an organization, that, you know, this may be a more healthy dynamic for him. This is really, by playing in all these super teams, what he's done is he's surrounded himself with a few stars and then a bunch of guys who make the veterans minimum, who are usually washed up and are there essentially just to shoot. This is the first time in a long time he's had guys who are 24 to 27 years old, who are in their prime, who can run a little bit, who can defend a little bit, and who may be more likely to give more on the defensive end in order to please LeBron James.
Clones, I need one moment so I can talk to you about something very important to me, stamps.com. It goes without saying that the U.S. Postal Service is an important tool for any business reaching every household every single day. Now, Stamps.com is the easiest way to access all the amazing services of the post office. Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. You can print postage for any mail class right from your own computer, with the exact amount of postage every single time, so you never underpay or overpay. And Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I love Stamps.com, and the reason I use Stamps.com is because it is convenient, it is easy, it is reliable, it is so efficient, it saves me so much time. I love this product. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. So go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Jungle. To get this deal, go to Stamps.com and enter the code name Jungle. I love this product. I know you will too. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Lee Jenkins, senior writer for SI, joining us again. So Lee, it's still early in the life of the new look Cavaliers. It's a very small sample size, but how do you think they stack up now against the rest of the East?
Yeah, I don't want to overreact to it, but anytime he makes the finals every year. So as long as his supporting cast, or I was trying to get at when I was saying kind of the irony of his career with the super teams, is I don't think he needs a lot to make the finals. I think that guys like Rodney Hood and Clarkson and Nance, he can get them there. Now, as far as getting over that hump, getting over the Warriors, you look at this team and as good as he is, he's not going to be able to match all of those Hall of Famers. But I don't really know where he can go to do that. I just don't know where the situation exists for him now or in the future to really vault the Warriors. I don't know if it exists for anybody. I mean, the most likely scenario, I suppose, right now is Houston. But even they, I'm not talking about for a LeBron destination, but for a team that could beat the Warriors, but even they would just have to be insanely hot and win games with such high scores that, you know, I mean, we're talking about something that would require probably one of the great upsets in modern sports history for a team to take out Golden State, whether that's a LeBron team or a team that's somebody else.
We're talking to Lee Jenkins. All right, so what about a LeBron destination? All these things that we're talking about right now and the moves they made at the deadline, what's it all mean in terms of LeBron's future in Cleveland or elsewhere?
I think that pick is going to have great resonance, that Brooklyn pick, because they're going to be able, after the draft, they're going to be able to have about a week or so, or it could even be on draft night after the picks are consummated, they're going to have an opportunity to move that pick. And that is an opportunity for them. He doesn't want to play with 20-year-olds, but they could move that pick and maybe get him another star. Now, their tax bill, and Brian Windhorst from ESPN had a great story about this today, their tax bill is going to be through the roof. But if anything, I think the deadline should be encouraging for Cavs fans and for people who want LeBron to stay in Cleveland, because it was an opportunity for Gilbert to show that, yes, he was willing to take on more money. He's willing to mortgage, you know, a little bit of necessarily that long-term future that they've been worried about for the present, which is clearly what LeBron is more worried about. But I think the rubber will meet the road, Jim, with that Brooklyn pick. And whether or not they are able to move that for somebody he feels like can help him in the next 2 to 3 years. I mean, this is someone who is highly cognizant of his window, of his prime. And I'm not saying it's close to closing, but he's trying to maximize the few years he has left.
Lee Jenkins joins us. Lee, one more thought about LeBron. How big of a role is Paul George going to play in LeBron's decision-making? And if you had to guess right now, where do you think George is going to be next year?
I think he's a big specter because there just aren't that many marquee free agents left. And I don't know that LeBron would want to go somewhere as, like, let's say we're talking about the Lakers and be that first domino and then wait another year for another free agent to come there. So I think George looms large, especially with the Boogie Cousins injury. And it's not as though they are, they don't have like a close friendship. I think they have an amiable relationship. I don't know that they're the kind of guys who are going to be talking all the time, maybe the way Wade and LeBron were back in 2010. So I feel like Paul George has had a really – there's no dysfunction in Oklahoma City. That team has gotten along well. Paul George likes playing with Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony. It won't be anything that drives him out of Oklahoma City. To me, it'll be more a question of, are they good enough? Do they look in the playoffs like a team where he can look at it and say, yeah, in a couple years, this could be a team that wins the title? Because that's what Paul George wants. And he will not shy away from the idea of, if he can form a super team or be part of a super team elsewhere, and it is the Lakers, that's something he's going to look at. But I really would not rule out Oklahoma City in that equation.
Lee Jenkins talking all things NBA, including this. Lee, before you go, you had a great piece, I thought, about sleep and what NBA players do to get it. First of all, how big of a problem is sleep in the NBA? Like, what kind of hours are these guys keeping, especially when they're on the road?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's huge. It's huge, I think, in all sports, but probably most the NHL and the NBA, just because you have the 41 road games. You've got these charters landing at 2 or 3 in the morning. Some young teams, they make them do these shoot-arounds really early. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge factor, and you have guys who are wired from competition, just wired naturally. I mean, I've had guys tell me, remember Rajon Rondo once told me he would watch the replay of every Celtics game at 2 in the morning and then call Garnett at 4 and review it over again. I mean, Kobe never slept. Blake Griffin was thinking of going to the UCLA sleep study, like to sleep in the building to kind of get his sleep analyzed. And some of these guys are trying this. I wrote about this new drink. It's called Somm. And some guys are trying this. A couple nuggets, especially Trey Lyles, has had success with it. It's, you know, a certified, fairly natural drink that doesn't leave you groggy in the morning. I feel like I'm doing an infomercial right now, Jim. But it's something that some players are looking for, because clearly they're desperate. I mean, I think that some of these guys just are always exhausted. And I think that probably goes for a lot of professional athletes. But there's a morning culture of the NBA. It's a late night culture, but then because of these morning shoot arounds, these guys end up groggy a lot.
We're talking to Lee Jenkins. All right, Lee, so you've got two games tonight before the All-Star break, and at the moment the Clippers are a half game out of the playoffs despite trading away Chris Paul before the season and Blake Griffin during the season. How much of the credit then goes to Lou Williams?
A lot. I mean, he's a professional scorer, and when you're trying to do something like they're doing, which is build for the future but be competitive in the present, it's guys like that who keep you in games. And he scores a lot of points. He's given that team, a young team, kind of an air of credibility. And Doc Rivers has done a really good job with that group. I mean, they have some guys on that team, some D-League, G-League type guys who they've been able to develop and who've played fairly significant roles for them. And they're trying to thread the needle, Jim. They want to be a little bit like Houston and Boston were, where they're building but also competing. They don't really want to do the full tank. And I think this season shows that might be possible. I mean, what free agents want to see, they don't want to see necessarily 20 and 21-year-olds. They want to see 25, 27-year-olds who are playing competitive basketball, who are in the playoffs, who they can feel like I can, help them get to the next place. It can help make them maybe a top four, top five seed in the conference. So that's what the Clippers are trying to do. They're trying to not bottom out, but still sort of be a destination, not necessarily this summer, but certainly in the summer of 2019.
Now, before I let you go, he spent his first seven seasons in Philadelphia, and there's this amazing story about his time in Philly when, as you point out, the legend of Lou Will was probably born. He was at a red light, and somebody approached him with a gun drawn, Lee. What happened next, and what does Lou make of that now?
No, well, Lou just asked to buy the guy a burger, just asked to buy him dinner. And only somebody with the magic of Lou Williams could pull that off. The guy just dropped the gun, and Lou walked him over to the McDonald's and bought him dinner, didn't sit with him for dinner. But the guy recognized Lou Williams, and there's sort of a, he has sort of an aura, I think, about him that comes, I don't know if it's because he's able to juggle two girlfriends at the same time, or if it's because he's been friends with a bunch of different rappers through his life and, been on different tracks, but there's something about Lou Williams, a magnetism that he has that I think is always sort of taking him to kind of a different spot in the NBA. And right now I feel like the Clippers look at him almost as a leader, which is an unusual role for somebody who for his whole career has been essentially a six-man gunner. And it kind of calls into question sort of what you make of those sorts of players, those Jamal Crawford type players who do get pigeonholed pretty early into their careers as, hey, you just supply offense off the bench. Well, this season, Lou Williams has definitely been more than that.
You know, Lee, I've taken so much of your time, but how about one quick thing before you go? I've got to ask you about Rondo and Thomas last night getting into it. The fact that both these guys were ejected before the end of the first quarter, and then after the game, Isaiah Thomas said that Rondo is still irritated about the tribute video. isn't that great, Lee? Knowing Rondo, does that surprise you at all? And then what do you make about all this nonsense over tribute videos?
The tribute video that never was, too. I mean, right. There's been so much about this, and it never even obviously happened. There has to be a tribute video now for everybody, Jim. It's gotten a little wild, but Rondo, I think it's interesting how it was a long time ago. We're talking about 10 years ago that team broke through and won it. Rondo's been on all these different teams and all these different situations, but there's something about that 08 Celtics team, crustiness, a legacy that they had that I think must live on. It must live on in those guys' minds, especially.
Pelicans over the Lakers last night, 139-117. That's a game where Anthony Davis went off. 15-for-18 from the field, 2-of-2 from deep. He made 10-of-11 from the line, 42 points, 15 boards. I mean, an absolutely absurd night. But the real story was not AD going off. The real story was Isaiah Thomas and Rajon Rondo going off and getting tossed. And it was oh so predictable. So with under a minute left in the first quarter, Rondo gets teed up for hitting Thomas in the face with a forearm. Thomas hits the technical, and then on the ensuing inbounds pass, they both bump into each other. And then they kept bumping into each other until the refs intervened and threw them both out of the game before the end of the first quarter. So you know things are pretty bad when two guys are getting run inside of 12 minutes.
Now again, Rondo and Isaiah wrestling a bit, still yapping at each other. Watch that if you want to.
Rondo has to be very careful.
Uh-oh, look out, there it goes again. I was going to say, the referees went right in there.
There obviously is some bad blood between those two because Rondo has really been into body of Isaiah.
Look at Rondo.
He's kicking them both out.
They are both out of the game.
Thanks to Sportsnet LA. So they're both out of the game, and they didn't make it out of the first quarter. So the question, why is a guy in his first season with the Pelicans beefing with a guy playing in his second game as a Laker? Because of the Celtics, of course. And because of tribute videos. Because that makes complete and total sense. A guy who's played with the Pelicans, Bulls, Kings, Mavs since 2015... is going all street justice with it over a tribute video for the Celtics. I mean, sure, why not? It feels like everything this season is about tribute videos. Now, you will recall that Rondo took great exception to the plans for Isaiah Thomas to get that tribute video. In fact, I'm not sure anybody has taken anything more seriously than Rondo took IT's tribute video. When talking about the Thomas tribute, you might recall Rondo telling the Telegram and Gazette last month, quote, "What has he done?" When told that Thomas led Boston to the conference finals, Rondo said, "Oh, that's what we celebrate around here?" End quote. And then he chased it with, quote, "This is the Boston Celtics. This is not the Phoenix Suns. No disrespect to any other organization, but you don't hang conference titles. Do we hang going to the conference finals? What do we hang here?" End quote. Now, that's some pretty serious lumber. But according to IT, Rondo was not done swinging. From the moment that he came onto the court, he was picking IT up full court and being very physical with him, hitting him in the face a number of times. And according to Isaiah, bringing up the tribute video once again.
"For whatever reason, he's an upset guy about me. I don't know what it is, but it's fine. Like, I can't control that. He kept bringing the tribute up when I was the one that shut the tribute down. So, I mean, I'm far past that."
Well, you might be far past that, but Rondo clearly is not far past that. In fact, I can't see a day anytime in the near future that Rondo's going to get by that. even though Rondo has played with four different teams since he left Boston. Despite that fact, he's still not past it. Despite that fact, he's bringing up the tribute video. That has got to be the most bizarre smack talk ever. And not just throwing verbal jabs, but actual jabs over a tribute video. Look, we know Rondo is a really different dude. We know Rondo is a really intense dude. And he brings a different kind of intensity to tribute videos. I get it. Kind of. To a certain extent. I mean, Paul Pierce was his teammate. They did win a ring together. He's going to have Pierce's back. I understand that. But my man, you got to let that go. You all have to let that go. That whole thing was a non-story that turned into a several weeks long story, and it's still going. Rondo is not with the Celtics anymore. Hasn't been for quite some time. Has played for four teams since he was. This guy's not with the Celtics. Isaiah's not even with the team that he was going to be with when he was supposed to receive the tribute video. That, by the way, he still has not received. Pierce got his tribute. Thomas did not get his tribute. Can we move on? Seriously, can we move on? Two dudes beefing about a team that neither one of them even play for anymore. Turn the page. I mean, I can't figure out if that was the best or worst beef ever. Like, did I want that thing to end right this second or to never end? It's unbelievable, though, Rondo. He was picking this guy up full court. I mean, there was no doubt that that was going to end like that because Rondo is still bent. Eric Musselman is my guest. Musk, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's so great to join you again.
Eric, always good to have you on. So let's get caught up on a few things. You're coming off that win over Boise State last night, 77-72. That's a game that was tied late, Eric, 72 apiece. Then you pull away at the end. There are a lot of different aspects to that game that I want to get into. But overall, how pleased were you with the way your team went on the road and won in a hostile environment?
Well, it was a great environment for sure at Boise State, and two teams with almost identical records. And we had beaten Boise State in Reno a few weeks ago. So it was really important. We didn't want to split the series in case of a tiebreaker. You know, you want to try to have a two-game lead. We have five games remaining, and it was a difficult night for us because our starting point guard and the first player I recruited at Nevada is Lindsey Drew, and he went down with an Achilles injury last night at halftime. He took a shot at half court right before the halftime buzzer and went down. And so our halftime was dealing with that and instead of dealing with X and O's. And because of that, Jim, it was a really, really big win for us emotionally without our lead guard in an environment that we knew was going to be really difficult even with a full roster. And now we're down to seven scholarship players as we head down the stretch with five games to play.
Eric Musselman joining us, and I was going to ask you about that, Eric. That is just such a tough, tough guy to lose. As a head coach, you know that injuries are a part of the game, and as a team, you have to deal with them. But at the same time, you've got such a bond with each one of these players, and you know the amount of work that they put in. So what's it like for you on a personal level when you see a player like that get hurt like that?
Well, last night, Jim, was just so tough because of, you know, the relationship that I have with Lindsey, and it's ironic. His dad is a former head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks and currently the associate head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And because of the NBA All-Star break, his father was at the game, and his dad doesn't get to see many games live at all. He watches every game via videotape and dissects Lindsey's game. But to have his dad there as well, it was just surreal, you know, walking into the locker room and the doctor looks at us and right away tells us what it is, and his dad's standing there. You feel for a player, especially someone in the middle of their junior year, and knowing now he's got all this rehab ahead of him headed into his senior year. But he's a great kid with a great work ethic, and he had a great attitude last night. He came back and joined the team on the bench and showed support, and he was with us, last night in the locker room celebrating. And that's what college athletics is all about. It's really not just about what takes place on the court, but the bond and camaraderie that you develop with these kids as well.
Eric Musselman's the head coach in Nevada. And then on top of that, Eric, it's such an emotional loss, and you're in a hostile environment, and you're starting what I would argue is the toughest stretch, five-game stretch that you've had since you got there, and you find a way to get this done. Caleb Martin, for instance, he had 21 last night. He also was battling an injury. After the game, he was talking about how that win was, quote, all about our mentality, our heart is crazy, end quote. So how would you describe that team's mentality and its heart?
Well, it's interesting because Caleb's had an injury and hasn't been able to practice now for about 9 days. And so it's, you know, for a coach, when you're so into your breakdown drills and you're trying to break down the opposing team's offensive and defensive groupings, and when you do these segments in practice and you have a player sitting over there in a boot, it's frustrating because you need those guys out there going through all the technique on how you want to defend things. But on the flip side, it's really about how do you get a guy healthy for a game. And our guys do have a lot of heart. You know, we've been down in scholarship numbers for all 3 years that I've been in Nevada because we've made the decision to have four sit-out transfer guys so that we could have this program have sustainability and not be 1 year where we have a great year and then another year where we're down. I mean, we've built it slowly but surely through the transfers. And when you have a player go down with an injury, you do need a group that's got great heart and perseverance. And, you know, for the remainder of the season, Jim, our preparation is going to be a lot more mental than it will be on the floor. We're going to basically be doing walkthroughs and nothing with any physical contact from here until when the season ends.
You know, Eric, I'm glad you brought that up because you're known for running a new play at the start of every single game just to give your opponents something new to look at and to think about. So there's no doubt. I mean, your ability to scheme is very obvious. That said, and it's got something to do with the injury that you just mentioned, but when you look at your job right now as a head coach, how much of it is about scheme and how much of it is about developing a culture and a mindset where your players can thrive?
Well, I think that, you know, hopefully, Jim, that through our conditioning and off-season things that we do to build camaraderie, hopefully the culture has been set. We certainly feel like we've played good down the stretch of the last two seasons because we're in great conditioning, and that's because of what we do in August and September. I think schematically the way that we do things is we try to change up every game somewhat and prepare to try to take away the opposing team's best player or some aspect that they are really good at. Having said that, we're not going to be able to do much on the court, so it's going to be through film work, it's going to be through walkthrough, and so it does change things because really our job as a coaching staff right now is how do we land the plane or how do we get these guys to the finish line where we continue to stay healthy and fresh because we can ill afford to have any of our players not have legs and not be mentally and physically ready to go and play big games, because that's what we have down the stretch with three road games and just two home games.
We're talking to Eric Musselman. He's joining us. So back to that point, Eric, last night's game is start of arguably the toughest stretch of the season, maybe even your time at Nevada. It's a run that includes games at Boise State, Utah State, UNLV, San Diego State. So how important was it to start off with that win the way you did?
Well, you know, we looked at last night's game and we talked about it as a team that it was worth two games. Because that was the team, you know, this first place, second place teams battling down the stretch to own the tiebreaker. So it was really the equivalent of two games for us. And we lost a tough game the other day at home to UNLV. Caleb Martin was unable to play due to injury, and so we had to make an adjustment on how we were going to try to score against the running Rebels, and it affected our play. And then we came back and played very well against San Diego State the next night. But we know that San Diego State draws so well. They're a talented team. UNLV, being an in-state rival, is going to be a very difficult game for us. And obviously, when you go to Utah State, they have such a great student section that's enthusiastic and has great energy, and that building jumps. So, and the other thing, Jim, that, you know, that the truth of the matter is when you have a number attached to your name and you're a ranked team and you're on the road, you know, we never thought 2 years ago that anybody would ever rush the floor when they beat us, and that's what happened when we lost a double overtime game at Wyoming. And so so there's an added burden, not just when you're playing and have first place next to your name, but when you're also a ranked team.
Eric, isn't that amazing? I mean, you took over a program that won 9 games the season before you arrived. Then you won 24 in the first year. You followed that up with 28 last year. You've already got 22 this year. And opposing teams are rushing, or fans are rushing the floor on you. How crazy is that?
Well, my, you know, none of us as coaches take losing very well at all. And I got a text after the game. I went into the locker room in Laramie and thought the world was ending because we lost a tough double overtime game. And I picked up the phone, and my son Matthew, who's a junior in high school, texted and said, "Hey, Dad, to put it in perspective, they actually rushed the floor after beating the Nevada Wolfpack." And I got a chuckle, and, you know, we've come a long way. And we still have a lot of basketball to play this year. And, you know, it's interesting because the Mountain West is so difficult to win on the road. But to be a ranked team, it's our fourth week that we've been ranked. You know, we've lost some tough games at Texas Tech, who's one of the best teams in the country. For whatever reason, when we've been ranked, we've always had a tough stretch of games right after we've been ranked. Thankfully, we did a good job last night. We got to try to continue it in Logan, Utah.
Hey, Eric, my biggest takeaway from that is that your high school junior son said that to you. What a great thing for him to say to his old man when his old man is just freaking out and so upset about the loss. And it was your 11th grade son that said that to you. Does Matthew play basketball?
Matthew does play basketball. The cool thing is, you know, Jim, about having kids is, no matter what's going on, they always seem to put things right back in perspective. And, you know, when we lost to UNLV, I went home and there's my daughter bouncing around doing cartwheels as if, you know, everything was great in the world. And it does put things in perspective. Your kids kids are just resilient. And winning and losing is obviously important to all of us, but most important is family. They're the ones that love you, and they're the ones that always try to pick you up after a loss.
You know, Eric, basketball has always been such a huge part of your family life. Your father was a famous coach. You played college basketball. You're now coaching at the highest level, always have. What's it like for you to watch your son play?
Tough, difficult, excruciating. I keep going on and on and on. It's you know, when you watch your son play, you know, all of us think that our kids are better than they are. All of us want our kids to play as many minutes as possible. And when they're not in the rotation that you want them to be or hope for them to be, you ache for them. The best thing to do as a father, especially if you're a coach, is just as far away as possible and try to be alone. My wife will not sit next to me at my son's game. Or my daughter's games, and that's probably pretty smart of her, and she always tells me, go sit in the farthest corner away from everybody as you possibly can.
Yeah, Eric, I know it makes sense, right? I know you guys love Nevada, and the community loves you. You're number 24 in both polls, and now it's almost like the new normal. You're a top 25 team. It does not surprise anybody, but you know exactly how that goes. When you have that kind of success that you're having in Nevada, your name's going to come up for other jobs. It happened after last season. You know it's going to happen again. So how do you approach it when it does?
Well, first of all, you know, we've tried to build the thing, Jim, where it's not some short-term thing, and we have four guys sitting out, and we feel like we built a family atmosphere, and I love where I'm living. My wife loves where we're living. We feel like, you know, we're a ranked team. We feel like we're a Power 5 program right now. You know, our administration's been great. I work for a great AD, great president. We're 3.5 hours away from our home in the Bay Area where I can go drive and watch my son play. And our recruiting base, still from a high school standpoint, has got to be the Bay Area, Oakland, San Francisco, Sacramento, and L.A. and San Diego. And so because of the proximity of where Reno is and our university is, it makes a perfect spot for me. And having coached the Warriors and Kings, logistically, being in Northern Nevada is good for us because those are our recruiting bases, and because of my background with those NBA teams, it makes it easier to get into homes.
And then finally, do you catch yourself sneaking glances at the NBA? Does that game still interest you?
It does. I watch the Timberwolves all the time and text Tom Thibodeau, and I don't know if he reads any of the text messages I send. He responds very politely. But I love watching the Warriors. We show our team, actually, Jim, to start every practice, we show our team NBA ball movement every single day, and most of the clips are passing that we watch and observe from the Warriors. But a lot of the plays that we start every game with are stolen or taken from NBA sets, and the ball movement, the way that the Warriors play, I think is great for any college, high school, AAU, fourth grade, fifth grade CYO team to watch, because they break the game down to its simplest form. And at the end of the day, the NBA basketball is still the very best in the world to watch and observe.
Now, let's talk for a minute about MMA. Devin Powell, you may or may not know that name. He's a UFC lightweight fighter from South Berwick, Maine. He's 8-3. You're probably wondering why I'm talking about Devin Powell. I'm talking about Devin Powell because there are two words that I never want to talk about ever again that are associated with Devin Powell. Those two words, ruptured testicle. You heard me correctly. Ruptured testicle. My man took to Instagram to post a photo of himself in a hospital bed with an IV drip and a couple of emergency workers at his side with the following caption, quote, "Thanks to the fine ambulatory services in Wells, Maine, I am checked into the hospital and ready for surgery. Shout out to Joe Lozen. We've been practicing knees on the ground, and he successfully ruptured my testicle with his sheer power. His opponent has no chance in April. Now, to get the blood clot drained and the goods repaired. I waited a day and a half to be seen. Word for the wise, if you hurt yourself, go get checked out. Dana White, Sean Shelby, how about an NYUFC fight coming up? This will be quite the comeback story. Share this and help me get the ball rolling on my next fight and follow my journey. Pun intended." All right. That's quite enough. Why don't we start with the fact that he and one of the emergency workers are giving a thumbs up while he's got a ruptured testicle. I mean, I hear the ruptured testicle. I hear that phrase. And I'm going Siskel and Ebert on that and going two thumbs down. 0 stars out of 5, my man. Ruptured. Man, ruptured is a terrible word. Ruptured is already a terrible word, and it's an even worse word when it's followed by testicle. And my man is not only jumping on social media to talk ruptured testicles, but he's cracking jokes about it, like getting the ball rolling on my next fight. Hey-o! And not just going with testicular one-liners, but giving shout-outs to the guy who ruptured his testicle. Quote, "Shout-out to Joe Lozen." What? Hey, look, I understand that being a UFC fighter is a different job. I understand that it takes a very different mentality. But if somebody hit me with a knee that ruptured my testicle with, quote, "its sheer power," man, I'm not talking to that cat ever again. I'm certainly not giving him a shout-out on Instagram. You know, like, big ups to the dude who just mashed my junk. Hashtag follow Friday to the guy who just crushed my grapes. And if ruptured testicle is not enough to get you squirming, how about the fact that this guy drops the line, quote, "Now to get the blood clot drained and the goods repaired." Or how about the fact that he waited a day and a half to get the goods checked out? Most guys, if something comes anywhere even near the groin, they're in the fetal position looking for a doctor. My man Powell, he's walking it off and probably kept on training. And that's not even the end of this horrifying story. He had multiple follow-up posts, which included one that had a caption that read in part, quote, "Fresh out of surgery from a ruptured testicle, compliments of a at Joe Lozen accidental knee," with an emoji of a peanut and a hammer. And it goes on. But how do you stop when ball is life? I live and die by my at Diamond MMA cup, but I didn't wear it this day. And then he adds a frowny face emoji. All right, so forget for a moment that this guy is dropping not one, but two. Actually, not one, not two, but three emojis in a post about a ruptured testicle. But did I catch in the middle of all of that a ball is life zinger? My man's posting about ball is life. Powell is one post away from giving a shout out to my man Yogi Roth with the hashtag, how great is ball? Look, I've got no idea what kind of a fighter this guy is, but my man can clearly take a punch and a knee and keep on going. Forget putting him on a card in New York City. Let this guy headline the whole damn thing. He's earned it. Man, my man has earned it. This guy's earned it like nobody else. That is a crazy story. And the fact that he's going on social about it with those jokes and those one-liners. Dana, hook him up. Hook my man up. Joel Sherman joining us. So you are in Tampa, obviously, for spring training with the Yankees. Before we get into the details, there have been a number of changes to the team of the offseason. But one of the biggest changes, Joel, of course, the arrival of Aaron Boone as manager. You would raise the point that Boone did not get that job because of the home run that he hit against the Red Sox in the postseason. But if he doesn't hit that home run, how likely is it that he even gets a chance to interview for that job?
Probably not great. I mean, it's funny. He shares almost the same reason that Bucky Dent got a job, right? Bucky Dent hit one of the most memorable homers in baseball history, 1 October, against the Yankees' most important rival, the Red Sox. And that put him on the trajectory to be the manager of the Yankees. And Aaron Boone did the same exact thing. Probably doesn't hurt to have the last name Boone, since his father and grandfather and brother all played Major League Baseball. Probably helps to be in a high-profile job like ESPN. That being said, he got into the room and won the job. Does he get into the room if he doesn't hit that home run? I would think probably not. But, you know, plaudits to him for getting into the room and winning the job.
You know, Joel, knowing him the way we know him, you know, as media members, we've all spoken to him as a player and even since he played, it's not a surprise that he did as well in the room as he did. But he has never been a manager at any level, so there's the adjustment to becoming a manager, and then there's the adjustment to becoming the Yankees manager. How do you think he'll handle that challenge?
Yeah, you know, I know you're aware of the saying, Jim, because, you know, you've covered sports for so long and so many different sports. I always think the major jobs with the Yankees are a lot like the, you know, when Michael Spinks said that he had a plan for fighting Mike Tyson, and Mike Tyson said they all have a plan until they get hit.
Right.
Everybody has a plan for being the Yankee manager or the GM, and then they get hit. Some level of crisis happens, and you realize the magnitude of the media is at a different level. And yeah, you know, it's just a different beast. And then you find out, you know, what kind of personality you have. You know, like, you know, we all thought that Joe Torre probably wasn't going to be able to handle it. He didn't do well in three managing jobs before he got to the Yankees. And it turned out his personality was ideal for this position. And so, you know, the answer is, I wish I could tell you that there are obvious personality traits that would help, but who knows?
Joel Sherman joining us. We're talking about the Yankees right now. Now, Joel, the Yankees have added huge pieces before in the past. We know this. Guys like Dave Winfield and Alex Rodriguez. What about the addition of Giancarlo Stanton? How does that compare to some of the other additions that I just mentioned?
Well, this is a huge addition, but something I've been thinking about a lot, Jim, is like in some ways, it is like looking for a house and having a budget, and suddenly your budget isn't for a mansion, but the price of the mansion falls to your budget. You almost have to go get it, even though it's not really the house for you. That's what Stanton felt like a little. You know, the Yankees kind of badly wanted Shohei Ohtani to come to them. The Yankees didn't even make it to the final seven. They then decide to turn around and, okay, what else can we do? And here are the Marlins trying to get rid of the largest contract in the history of the game. Stanton has a no-trade clause. He doesn't want to go to San Francisco. He doesn't want to go to St. Louis. And the Yankees could get a deal where the Marlins eat a significant amount of money, and they essentially get a mansion for the price of a good house. And I'm not exactly sure they needed him. Like, you never turn down a great player. The more great players you have, the chances to win are better. But if you told me the Yankees didn't make that trade and then turned around and used the money on, let's just make them like Yu Darvish, I'm not sure that they're not a better team, because to me, their issue over 162 games is much more likely to be pitching depth fragility than it is going to be offense. Remember, without Stanton, they scored the second most runs in the major leagues last year. There was not a lot of room for improvement there. And they have some hitters potentially coming, and guys like Gleyber Torres and Miguel Andujar. I'm not exactly sure this was what they needed, but it was just, you know, to get old Godfather, it was an offer they couldn't refuse.
Hey, Joel, not only do I love that analogy, I've actually lived the analogy, and I can add to the analogy. I once was looking for a house, and there were these models in this neighborhood, you know, your typical kind of Southern California cookie cutter, overpriced, this, that, and the other. I loved this one model, but it was way too big and way too expensive. But then the person selling the home said it fell out of escrow, and it's a phase five house with phase two pricing. And I said, it's way too big. I don't need it. And this person said, are you stupid? You can get this house for this price. So I went and bought it. And the weird thing was, we grew into a house that was way too big. And maybe that was a stupid analogy to add to your good analogy, but it worked.
I don't know that, but I think it kind of works. I'll throw in one other thing that's not a, you know, people have talked about it, but I don't think they've talked about it enough, Jim. That is the additional fringe benefit of Stanton, why doing it makes a little more sense for the Yankees, which is if they don't do it, they're going to feel almost no matter what happens this season, win, lose, or draw, but especially if they miss the playoffs or get bounced out of the playoffs. In the next free agency phase, when Manny Machado and Bryce Harper are there, and they've already got under the luxury tax and they've reset it, there would be this incredible pressure to give, you know, $400 million or $300 whatever to Harper or Machado. Well, now with Stanton and Judge, there is literally no place for Harper. And with another big right-handed bat in Stanton, I'm not saying that they won't do Machado, but, like, the pressure goes away a little to add another huge player after they've done this. So it's almost like they got this guy for about $220 million for 10 years and avoided having to do $300 or $400 million for another player.
That makes sense to me. Perfect sense to me. Joel Sherman joining us. Now, Joel, what about the dynamic between the two of them? As an example, if you go back, there was the arrival, for instance, of Mickey Mantle to play alongside Joe DiMaggio. You had Dave Winfield playing with Reggie Jackson. You had A-Rod playing with Derek Jeter. In those situations, it was not always smooth between the new guy and the existing guy. Any sense of what that dynamic is going to be like between Stanton and Aaron Judge?
Yeah, that was the column I wrote in the paper today. Is literally, you can go back to 1980-81, that offseason, the Yankees brought in the 6'6" right-handed dynamic player to help them try to get a championship. He was a right fielder, and they already had a right fielder who had just led the American League in homers and finished second in the MVP. It was Dave Winfield and Reggie Jackson. It's the same exact thing to the height of Stanton, 6'6". To Judge winning the AL Homer Championship and finishing second in the MVP this year. The difference is, you know, the guy who was in position then, Reggie, had an ego even bigger than his power. So did Dave Winfield. They were kind of like the best of frenemies right from the beginning, very similar to Jeter, A-Rod. Now, there was a potential for some tension here, because if you remember at the All-Star game in particular last year, which was in Miami, in Judge's hometown, in Stanton's home then, right, of Miami, Stanton did not handle all the questions about Judge becoming the face of baseball and the new hulking power hitter well. And to me, it, you know, that the veteran didn't handle it well and the rookie did, said something. And again, he's going to deal with stuff coming to New York. It's a lot like your manager question, Jim, about, like, how will he handle, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, forget about never playing in a playoff game yet 7-8 years into his career. He hasn't played an important game after August 1st yet, sure, in his career, you know, much less October 1st. So we're about to see a different level of scrutiny for him. That being said, I thought Stanton was great at his press conference and at the Baseball Writers Awards dinner, which was last month in New York. Stanton and Judge sat next to each other. They clearly seem to be getting on well. They both handled the night well at the microphone. And quite frankly, I think Judge is one of those types who we know in a variety of sports who makes it comfortable to be a teammate with him. You know, like, he's never going to make it uncomfortable. He's just a team-first, team-oriented kind of guy, and he's not coming in here with Reggie's attitude or ego or the A-Rod Jeter dynamic. And, if he's got to go to left field, he's not going to blink. If he's got to DH some, he's not going to blink. In fact, him and Brian Cashman, Jim, told a story yesterday that Cashman, which said a lot because the guy was a rookie last year, just out of the right thing to do, called Judge before the trade and said, look, we're very close to maybe being able to do this. I want to give you, this is a chance to tell me, hey, I'm worried about playing left field. I'm worried about being DH. And Judge just essentially said, you can get Giancarlo Stanton. Go get Giancarlo Stanton. It will make us so much better. So I just think he's that kind of personality.
At Canada Dingo tweets, maybe Rondo and Thomas should give up this beef and go to Red Lobster. Signed, Isaiah Thomas.
Zeke, it's always great to have you on The Last Word. Thank you very much for joining us. What's up?
My pleasure. I just got back from Red Lobster.
All right, so there's a lot of background, a lot of history. That's Isaiah Thomas. Hawk's like, huh? What? I love that. I love when the newest members of the XR4TI have no idea about something happened in the show back in the day. That's really funny. Hawk, your reaction to that was really funny. Like, huh? What is that? Alvy, play that again. I mean, people who've listened to the show for a long time know this thing cold. But for those who have never heard that, you probably would be like, what? That's me welcoming NBA great Isaiah Thomas to a TV show and an interview, and him starting by saying, great, I just got back from Red Lobster.
Zeke, it's always great to have you on The Last Word. Thank you very much for joining us. What's up?
My pleasure. I just got back from Red Lobster.
Kind of weird and random, right? Hawk said, was he paid to say that? No. That was not a conditional pitch. That was not an endorsement of anything. What that was. He's a fascinating guy who played back in the day, Chucky Brown. And when I talked to Chucky Brown had played for like 10 teams in 11 years in the NBA. Great guy. Great guy. And teammates loved him. But he had bounced around. And he was telling the story of what it was like to be like in the CBA in the minor leagues. But then what it was like to be in the NBA and get an NBA per diem and how life was different. And he talked about how great it was to have that per diem because you could go to Red Lobster.
That's another reason, Chucky, probably you have such great respect and appreciation for the NBA. A lot of these guys should go back to the CBA and spend a little bit of time. Then they might appreciate more what they have.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would help a lot because I hear a lot of the, we get chartered flights. We stay in the five-star hotels and, guys, we complain about that. I'm like, man, we get the nice meal money. In the CBA, you got $25 a day for meal money. What $25 a day can get you in is Denny's. You go to Denny's every day or McDonald's. We can go, the meal money we get now is like 80-something bucks. You can go to a nice restaurant. You go to Red Lobster to get you a nice meal.
Isn't that so great? I mean, isn't that awesome? So that soundbite was from 2001, and he was talking about, can you imagine pro athletes, even semi-pro athletes or athletes in the minor leagues getting a $25 per diem for food? You might be able to spend that money wisely, but a professional athlete, we know a lot more about nutrition right now than we did then, but what was $25 going to get you? I mean, these guys are supposed to be running on premium fuel. He said, yeah, they don't know. You get to the NBA, you can go to Red Lobster and get yourself a nice meal. Needless to say, we had a lot of conversation about that in ensuing weeks. And so much so, Isaiah Thomas apparently had been hearing me on the radio because when I interviewed him on TV, that was the first thing he said. Zeke, great to have you on the show. What's up, Isaiah? How are you?
Zeke, it's always great to have you on The Last Word. Thank you very much for joining us. What's up?
My pleasure. I just got back from Red Lobster.
Damn, you're fell out of my chair when he did that. He did that live on a TV show that I was doing. I just got back from Red Lobster. Anyway, that goes back to 2001. clones with the recall. That's Jamie Kitchen who set that up. There it is, clones. Thursday down. Now it's on to TGIF. Let's go out and get it. The grind includes Friday. Back it in, denim up, and I will check you right back here tomorrow. See you then.